You're listening to Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. In the summer of 1942, the composer Aaron Copland accepted a commission of $500 to write the score for a new dance program for the choreographer Martha Graham.
Appalachian Spring is a joyous dance. It has its moments of darkness too, but it is essentially joyous.
Graham's dance follows a frontier bride and groom as they settle into their house and get to know each other and their strict new community. In the course of the dance, the couple is visited by a revivalist preacher, a flock of four young female followers, and an experienced pioneer woman.
This is a story of a young married couple who are coming into their home for the first time. It begins in the daylight and ends with the evening when they're alone. The preacher is the itinerant preacher who teaches and preaches the evils that love can lead one into. And the followers are the ones who are charmed and seduced by him. And the pioneer woman is the one who has experienced all this before.
Martha Graham danced the part of the bride. Merce Cunningham played the revivalist preacher who visits the young couple.
It's one of those coincidences, you could say it, that happening that was such a miracle.
Yuriko Kikuchi was another dancer in the original production.
It was a miraculous happening, Aaron Copland and Martha Graham together at that moment. For me, I'm 85 plus now, but still I get goosebumps when I think about the past.
For our ongoing series on American icons, we asked Jocelyn Gonzalez to look into how this miraculous happening created a work that really seems to define the American character.
Introductions aren't necessary, no. Mr. Copeland.
Good afternoon.
Basically, you know, Aaron Copland is to American music what the Beatles were to Liverpool. And Appalachian Spring, you know, for most of America, was his Ed Sullivan show.
I assume everybody knows this piece.
Only by reputation.
Only by reputation.
It was the right piece at the right time, both the dance and the music. And when that kind of thing happens, a work takes on a momentum almost larger than itself.
In 1944, Appalachian Spring, the collaboration between composer Aaron Copland and choreographer Martha Graham, premiered in Washington, D.C. The American home front, just beginning to sense an end to World War II, took the dance and its music into its weary heart. It was a piece that expressed hope and possibility, despite the hard times and sacrifice still ahead. The dance went on to become a beloved icon in the Graham repertory. But it's Copland's score that's lodged itself in our collective ear.
He's been branded as a kind of American icon because he does capture both nostalgia and innocence and power.
Judith Tick is a music historian and a professor at Northeastern University. She co-edited the book, Aaron Copland and His World. She believes it was Martha Graham herself who inspired the score for Appalachian Spring.
Copland once described Martha Graham the way few people did. He said that there was something prim and restrained and simple yet strong about her, which one tends to think of as American. So I think what Copland did was to project what he wanted this music to be onto her personality.
Not so sentimental, please, a more non-committal. This is a little passage work here. Miss Graham is dancing.
Copland's score originally had to be written for 13 instruments because the pit in the auditorium at the Library of Congress, where the ballet debuted, was so small. Without the full orchestral vocabulary at his disposal, Copland had to strip down his sound, resulting in music that is as intimate and yet expansive as the themes of the dance.
Musically, he does that because the orchestration is very spare and lean. There's not a lot of romantic harmonies, not a lot of lush chords. It sounds like Charles Sheeler's very spare, lean drawings of shaker chairs, or Noguchi's rocking chair, which was on that set.
After the dance began touring to critical and popular success, Copland severed the score's connection to the ballet and rearranged it for full orchestra, removing sections too closely related to the ballet narrative. Appalachian Spring won a Pulitzer Prize in May 1945. Orchestras around the country began to pick it up as a concert piece. And finally...
Shall we try to record?
Yes, let's try it.
Stand by, please.
Bye.
We're recording.
This is Appalachian Spring, take one.
Once it was recorded, it could be broadcast. People could buy it in their homes and they could listen. They didn't need to go and see the ballet with the piece. I like the opening of Appalachian Spring. I think it's a miracle. There's nothing but diatonic chords, revoiced, spaced out, and they just capture that sense of openness and vistas.
When we hear musical images that somehow seem to evoke within us the American landscape, whether it's urban or pastoral, those sounds emanate from Copland's work.
Pianist Michael Boriskin is the artistic director of Copland House, the site of the composer's home in Cortland Manor, New York. He says a young country like America is still constructing its cultural identity. So around the time of Appalachian Spring, American composers were developing a classical music tradition unique to the American voice. Copland is critically important to that emerging sound.
That's one of the reasons he turned to jazz and tried to graft the energy and dynamism of jazz onto a kind of European-based concert technique. And it really was only in the mid-1930s, encouraged perhaps by the hardships of the Depression, where a lot of kind of left-leaning artists felt populist impulses, and Appalachian Spring certainly is an outgrowth of that kind of artistic populism.
Appalachian Spring is designed to build to the appearance of Simple Gifts.
Terry Teachout is a music and dance critic.
And this is even more salient when you listen to the suite that Copland prepared.
That tune is the melody in Appalachian Spring that captures listeners' attention most often. It's based on "Tis the Gift to Be Simple," a religious hymn from the Shaker community. Copland discovered the song in a book of hymns published in 1940.
The heart of Copland's style is its deliberate simplicity. The word plainness comes up over and over again when people who knew him well talked about him. And when he encountered this Shaker tune, not just the tune, but the idea behind the tune, it was again one of these found objects that suddenly tells you something about yourself that maybe you didn't fully understand. And it had a tremendous effect on him.
It sounded like a nursery rhyme.
As a kid growing up in Detroit, composer Patrick Grant came across Copland's Simple Gifts on one of those Sunday afternoon classical music radio shows.
And because it sort of follows all the rules of other nursery rhyme music, like the melody is just within an octave, all the intervals are relatively close together, which makes it very singable, and it's just based on a couple of chords. Simple Gifts is basically a march in terms of its meter, its tone. Melodically, the whole piece is just a big arc form. It just goes up and goes down. All within an octave.
In the last decade, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush both used Appalachian Spring to celebrate their electoral victories. Marshall Blonsky, author of American Mythologies, thinks Copland's repeating variations on the Shaker tune may explain why it's used so often during public functions.
It's martial music, and all martial music has no tragedy in it, has only the swelling of the heart. And when Copland orchestrated the Shaker lyric, he changed it from simplicity to a rousing, patriotic march. Signified by this orchestra is the community, the nation, all as one.
That's what we would like. It's about what we wish, not necessarily what is. Copland's influence spread right into movie scores.
Music historian Judith Tick.
I think the score for The Best Years of Our Lives, a film about homecoming that Hugo Friedlander did, was a good example of his influence. And I think composers like Philip Glass acknowledge his debt to Copland, and certainly John Adams. They don't imitate. They absorb both vision and ambition.
In 1998, Spike Lee's film He Got Game intercut the gritty rap music of Public Enemy with various selections of Copland's music. The film is about a father and son playing out their strained relationship on the basketball court. The story opens with a camera panning down from an endless blue sky to a young man shooting layups on a city court. His muscular body twists in midair, suspended on those famous open chords.
Even artists who are not themselves composers, somebody like Spike Lee, will encounter this music for the first time, often in adulthood, and say, oh my God, this is where it all comes from. And then he draws on it as soundtrack material for a film.
Reminiscent of those dancers in the original production, watching this athlete spin and leap to the strains of Appalachian Spring, there is again a sense of possibility.
Appalachian Spring, both the dance and the music, they speak to our better selves. And I think especially in a country like America, which is self-created, this is the quintessential American theme.
For Studio 360, I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez.
You can find out more about Appalachian Spring and the other American icons in our series at studio360.org. I'm Kurt Anderson. Thanks for listening to Studio 360 today. I hope you'll join us again for next week's show.